This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You're listening to an iFanboy special edition podcast on the Wolverine Club. Hey, everybody, you're listening to a special edition podcast on The Wolverine. My name is Paul Montgomery, and not the usual suspects on this episode. Joining me on this episode, two special guests, the furrier of the two, Mr. Brett White, co-host of the Matt and Brett Love Comics podcast and a contributor to CBR and MTV Splash Page. Hey, Brett.
Hello, I like that I'm furry.
Also joining us, my co-host on Fuzzy Typewriter and the co-writer of Sparrow and Crow, the Demoniac of Los Angeles, David Ocampo. Hey, Dave.
Hey. So I want to make sure that people know that you're not just scraping the bottom of the barrel, right? Like, we're here because...
No, you guys are like the sixth or seventh people that I emailed about this.
Oh, okay.
Weird because, yeah. this is the third or fourth, depending on if you count Lone Ranger, comic book movie of summer 2013. And I think a lot of people are a little burnt out. And given that this is, you know, the follow-up to X-Men Origins Wolverine from, I believe, 2009? Yeah. I think people are a little wary of this one. And we're going to be like, you know what? I've had my fill of the superhero. I've heard a lot of people, actually, who are tired of, like, buildings falling down. And yeah. Like, I think I'm gonna wait it out. And maybe next year I'll get back into the superhero movies. Or maybe I'll wait till Thor or something like that.
I would urge those people that this is the one to see because there are no buildings falling
yeah,
down.
Yeah, there's no... Spoiler alert. They don't have the scale to quite do that. But I thought you guys would be great candidates to talk about this. Brett is a big fan of the mutants. Yes. Very tolerant of the mutant people.
For a good 5 years, they were the only comic books that I read.
Yeah.
Like, branching out into the rest of the Marvel Universe was a big deal for me.
And both of you also recently read the Claremont. It's Claremont and Frank Miller, right?
Frank Miller, yeah.
Right.
So would you say this movie is loosely based on that stuff or?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely take a lot of liberties, as they should, but it was a four-issue, Chris Claremont wrote it, Frank Miller drew it, and it was a story of Wolverine in Japan, and that led into a two-part story in Uncanny X-Men after that, which actually had the Silver Samurai and Viper and these other characters in it, so they actually kind of pull from both of those storylines.
Yeah, my experience with Wolverine in Japan, and I know that he has, you know, a long history of going over to Japan and falling in love with people and then getting in trouble with ninjas, is from the 90s X-Men cartoon, Yoriko.
Oh, that was Out of the Past two-parter?
I guess so. Yeah. so that's my experience. So let's talk about expectations. Because ooh. This is a film franchise that, I mean, the X-Men film franchise really sort of jump-started the superhero, the comic book movie genre. Yeah.
I would say Blade doesn't get enough credit. Like Blade kind of like opened up the door a tad, but X-Men was the, you know, the big spectacle summer blockbuster hit that everyone thought was going to be a flop. And then it did not flop.
because I remember seeing Blade in the theater and going like, wow, that was really cool. They did that. And then, but yeah, that could have been a flash in the pan. I think it was X-Men really was like, wow, they can take our childhoods and make them good and big and on the screen.
Yeah. And X-Men also, like, no more daunting, like, the X-Men at the time, that's a daunting task. The fact that one of the first modern era big comic book movies was also a team, like, you're biting off a lot there, guys. And they, for the most part, got it right.
Yeah, and X2, I think, for a long time, was sort of like the high watermark for superhero movies. And point to that, that's the great one.
Absolutely. And then they made a third one.
Oh. It was a different director, and then they were going to do some X-Men Origins movies.
Oh, no.
And we're going to spin off the franchise, and we're going to do a Wolverine movie.
Oh, it hurts.
We're going to do a Magneto movie, I remember. And so I was thinking it was going to be like the Holocaust and all that stuff. And then we're going to do maybe like a First Class movie, and I think the Magneto and the First Class movie sort of wound up in one big movie, which is X-Men First Class.
It's probably after they saw the mess that X-Men Origins Wolverine was. They're like, let's skip these origin movies.
Yeah.
Let's just move straight into First Class.
But, you know, I got to say, I think, I don't know how you guys felt about it, but I really liked First Class. I'm sure I've talked
to
you.
No, X-Men First Class was great. Yeah.
I feel like they kind of righted the ship there a bit. And, you know, that set us back on a good course. And so the big question mark was the Wolverine, because we had Darren Aronofsky attached to it at first, which sounded amazing.
And he's the one that decided to title it The Wolverine.
Yeah, and it was weird choice. And then I believe he said that he didn't want to have to leave his family for a really long time.
Yeah.
Which I think is also happening with J.J. Abrams and Star Wars now, because that's going to be filming in England. Anyways, lots of tangents with this. But
we're getting to the movie.
So Darren Aronofsky was an interesting choice. And I was honestly thinking, while watching this movie, what would this have been like if it was Darren Aronofsky? But instead, we have James Mangold. And it's important. I think it is important to bring up X-Men Origins Wolverine and X-Men 3, because it does pull some stuff from that, and it even looks forward to, what are we calling it?
It's X-Men Days of Future Past.
X-Men Days of Future Past. Okay.
They thankfully did not burden it with like X-Men Second Class.
Yeah.
Days of Future Past.
Yeah,
part one.
So that's, you know, so all of that stuff, it's still in there. But I thought that, you know, going in, I had very low expectations. I believe I tweeted from the theater at the Wolverine, thrilled to death about it. Because I was looking forward to writing a review, but I maybe wasn't necessarily super excited about the movie. Just because of the dubious legacy from those previous movies. And
also the trailers were kind of hit or miss. Like the trailers were just good enough to get me kind of invested cautiously.
Hey, ninjas. That looks great.
Yeah, like ninjas, it looked like it actually had a story. And I really respected the fact that they were going for it. Like no one was whitewashed. Hugh Jackman was the only name actor in, like, he's carrying the movie. There are no other actors of note in this entire movie except for Famke Janssen.
Yeah,
so I was cautiously optimistic because it seemed like it could be okay.
Right. And I think I was optimistic because I liked that they were focusing on him and focusing on that Japan story, which to me felt, I mean, that's one of those touchstone Wolverine stories for me. It's one of the first ones I read, and it was one where I always liked that idea of, for anybody who's ever read that story really kind of focuses on Wolverine as Logan, as this character who feels like he's maybe more animal than man.
Yes.
And so he's suddenly in this Japanese society where honor and is everything, and you know what you do with yourself means everything, and it's him not feeling worthy of being a man among he feels like an animal among these men, and then it's about him kind of coming to terms with that and finding his own sense of honor and everything like that. This movie isn't about that, but it kind of uses the same plot to tell a different kind of story, which I really liked. It's about what a guy does after a bad movie like X-Men 3.
Yeah.
this man, Logan, had to kill the woman he loves. And so in that way, I thought that this movie was really interesting as it begins, because it has almost this sort of noir feel to it. It's this guy haunted by his past who wants to just remove himself from society. And then he's given a choice, and it's sort of, you know, what are you going to do now? And I kind of like where it picks up here. So that was very interesting to me.
Yes.
And I like that the inciting incident is the murder of his neighbor, a CG grizzly bear.
which is actually pulled from the comics.
Is it really?
Yes,
okay.
Yes. I was so happy they used that.
That's the only thing in the entire movie that is pretty much directly pulled from the comics, including all the way up to the him going to the bar to confront the guy that shot the bear but didn't do a good job of it, and getting a beer, like a beer mug, shoved in his face. Like that is directly from the comic.
That's interesting. I didn't know.
He actually fights the bear in the comic, but you know, it's more because he has to. And I always love that, because in the book it is sort of the metaphor of, you know, he's the bear in a way, you know, and that follows through in this movie, as we'll see as we talk about the plot of it towards the end. You know, there's definitely a tie to him and that bear again, which I really liked in this movie.
Yeah, I thought it was. I mean, dodgy CG effects aside, I thought that was.
You didn't like the CG bear urinating?
I thought it was. I don't know. I thought it was. An elegant little metaphor, and I love their sort of their respect for each other. And it's not just that the bear is murdered. And we're getting into bear murder spoilers here. So right. Hopefully you've seen the film. It's not just that this hunter has killed the bear. It's that he didn't do it the right way. And it's not just that the bear suffered. It's that he poisoned the bear with this poison arrow, and then the bear went on this spree and killed everyone else in this hunting party. And so it was just like he's being a bad hunter.
Yes.
And getting other people hurt. So there's a lot of things going on in that. And so, but then Wolverine comes down and is ready to break his vow that he's made to Jean Grey, that he's not going to kill anymore. And luckily, this envoy of a very wealthy Japanese family steps in, and she's been looking for Wolverine for, I think she said, 2 years. And this is Yukio. And she's going to take him back to Japan, where he will get a bath like the Beast from Beauty and the Beast.
So great.
I was like, that is right from Beauty and the Beast, even with the scrub brushes.
Yeah, there are only a couple of like comedy moments. And like one of the big problems with X-Men Origins Wolverine was all of the like one-liners, groan-inducing cliches, and like bad jokes and bad like puns. And this movie only has like that bear peas, which I guess is kind of a joke, but not really. And then that bath scene. Like, and that's it. Like, you don't get any, like, poop jokes or, like, Transformers, like, hiding on the lawn from Sam Witwicky's parents nonsense.
Well, there's nothing as broad as that. I think Jackman's, even though he's, like, you know, grizzled, like, he's pretty charming throughout. Like, he's, you like this guy, and he, you know, he makes light of things. And I think the smartest thing about this movie is choosing that source material and getting this character who's been consistently strong throughout the franchise, no matter what has been around him, but putting him in a different environment with completely different characters, and only the salient elements from X3 carry through. Like, we don't have any flashbacks to you know, the Phoenix stuff. We just know that he had to put her down. He had to kill this woman that he loved because she was hurting people, and that's all you need to know.
Exactly.
And theoretically, you could go into this movie and just have watched this,
do not watch X3 if you haven't. Just go watch this.
So theoretically, you could just do this, and I like that idea. Yeah, it is sort of like a noir story. It is sort of an out of the past kind of thing, because the Wolverine has a pretty deep past. He was around during the Civil War,
we also don't get a montage like X-Men Origins Wolverine of like, back to back, Wolverine
him
and
through the ages,
fighting in every war.
Oh God, yeah, I'd block a lot of that out. But so the most important relationship here is going back to World War II, when Logan was in a prison camp near Nagasaki, and he was there during the bombing of Nagasaki. And I like that it just starts with this prison camp being evacuated. And we have this one guard who's thinking about, wait, there's that crazy guy we have in the hole in the ground.
Yeah.
I got to make sure he's okay.
I kind of want to see a movie about how he got in that hole.
I like the mystery. I like that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Like, but I want to see that like comic book prequel or something. Just imagining feral Wolverine fighting a bunch of Japanese World War II soldiers and then be like, just shove him in a hole.
Just shove him in a hole. We don't know what else to do with him. Just shove him down there. And then they're going to bomb Nagasaki. It's just like the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah.
And so we have this guy, Yoshida, who has this opportunity to commit seppuku and kill himself. But he's not ready. He can't do it. The other guys, his superiors, some of the older guys were able to do it. Yeah. And he just can't do it. Wolverine recognizes that, grabs the guy and says, we got to run. But we're not going to be able to outrun this bomb. We've got to duck and cover. Tosses him down into the hole, shields him, and it's a great way to show the bond between these characters. And if this happened to you, if you were Yoshida, this would stay with you for your entire life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And would entirely shape the trajectory of your life and the choices you make, and the things that you're obsessed with. But also, it's just a great showcase for Wolverine's powers.
Yeah, this was the moment where I was like, oh, they're not going to pull punches. Like, I was like, this could be a real movie. When Yoshida looks up and you'd see Wolverine, burnt up Wolverine, mm-hmm. like skinless, hairless. And I was like, this movie is PG-13, but it's pushing it. Like, that was dark and edgy and cool, dramatic.
I thought it was just enough. Because I've also heard people say that this movie's boring.
Really?
I don't entirely understand that, we've also seen some comments that it lacks gore. It needs some more blood, given some of the themes that are going on, and like maybe when those claws pop when he's lost his healing factor, there should be some blood there.
There is blood on his claws. I noticed it during the movie.
I noticed
it in one place, but I was waiting for more of that. That's my one thing that I'll agree with is in what you just said is that. I do remember there was another storyline, and I feel like maybe if there was an element pulled from another storyline, and Brett probably knows this one, there was a story where Wolverine, I think it was like Wolverine and Rogue were in Genosha, where they don't have their powers are sort of neutralized for whatever reason.
Yep.
And that's a point that I specifically remember, you know, as a teenager reading this, and he was popping his claws, but the wounds around them wouldn't heal up because he didn't have a healing factor. And I wanted to see like that he'd be losing a lot of blood from, you know, every time he pops his claws, there'd be these wounds, and they showed bullet wounds and all sorts of other things, but they kind of resisted that a bit, I noticed. And I kind of wanted – that was one thing I kind of wanted.
I think it popped up on the news this week that when this is going to be coming out on Blu-ray, there's going to be like an unrated edition.
Oh, nice.
And it'll probably be much gnarlier than this.
Mm,
But I thought it was – the thing is, I thought there were some great action set pieces throughout, and I wasn't bored. But still, it's not – you know, this isn't – you know, it's not the Transporter, you know, it's not Crank.
And it's also not like Man of Steel or Avengers. Like, my mom asked me, was it as good as Avengers? And I had to say, like, it is really good in a totally different way. Like, you're not going to see the big action spectacle of a Man of Steel in Wolverine, which I kind of respect because superhero movies have been shoving down our throats these giant, giant, like Dark Knight Rises level fight scenes, which are entertaining, but it was so pleasant to watch a movie like this that was just a story.
it was much more in line with an action hero movie, like a Die Hard or a Rambo or even like a Clint Eastwood film or even, you know, something like that, where it is about this guy who's got this sort of tortured past and he's sort of trying to figure out, you know, his reason for living, his reason for continuing on. He's my favorite line in the whole movie that sort of to me sums up the movie is when I think it's this Yoshida guy says it at one point. He says, or maybe another character says it about him and it's relayed to him, but he says, you'll live forever with no reason to live, or you're destined to live forever with no reason to live, which I thought was fascinating.
I mean, this is a guy who has a death wish. I mean, it's the classic thing where he's immortal, so even if he wanted to commit suicide, he can't.
Right.
And also, he can't he can't even start over and settle down because it's that other thing, like, you know, with like a, you know, a vampire, I'm going to outlive you, you know.
Yeah.
even if we love each other, I'm going to outlive you, I'm going to outlive any kids that we have. So it's just, you know, this tragic existence. And I like that mm-hmm. idea of Wolverine as a Ronin, and they yep. do bring up yeah. that term, and I think that's the key. And you have Logan, who is desperate sort of to die, and just to be put out of his misery so he doesn't have to live with his guilt of having murdered the woman that he loves. And then you have Yoshida, on the other hand, who is at the end of his natural life, and he wasn't ready to die at Nagasaki, and he isn't ready to die now, even though he's ancient, he's decrepit.
Yeah.
He's been doing everything. He's got that crazy bed that he's on, and like
he's got a really cool Spencer's Gifts bed.
he's got all the Sky Mall stuff, and yeah. he does not want to die. He's doing everything he can to live as long as he can. And now they've crossed paths for the second time, and he's like, I can take from you what you don't want so I can have what I want.
Yeah.
To continue on, because my family is in ruins and they're not ready to take up this Yoshida name. And they say that he's the most powerful person in not just Japan, but in Asia.
Yeah.
Which makes him pretty damn powerful. And I like when they arrive in Japan, Wolverine's looking around at all the billboards and there's all these Yoshida brand phones and stuff. And
right.
like, he's Sony, you know, like
yeah.
he owns everything, and all of this stuff, this whole empire is probably just an offshoot of his trying to gain immortality, just technology that he stumbled on in that
effort. It's like he knows it exists. Like if you saw a guy do what Wolverine did in the after survive an atomic bomb, that would definitely put a bug in your ear of like, immortal is possible. He has right. it. Like I can find it. I can do it too. Like that's. I think all the motives that they give everyone in this movie except for Viper are really well done. Like even Shingen, who is Mariko's father and Yoshida's son, even gets a really good motive for like a half second of like Grandpa Yoshida's desire to be immortal has ruined the company. He has spent mm-hmm. so much money, and Shingen was the one who kept it running and kept all that hidden from his dad. So you kind of get like, oh, if he almost like sacrificed his life to keep this family and company together. And when he gets passed over, he gets super angry. Like, I like that little bit of justification where he wasn't that much of a cardboard cutout villain. And Viper is just hired.
Yeah. And this, I think, you know, at the core of this movie, it's, I think what separates it from Wolverine Origins and especially from X3 is that it's really zeroed in on character, and it just happens to have great action sequences.
Yes.
Character comes first.
It's the Bryan Singer model that he always said of like,
yeah.
my movies are dramas with action in them. That's what he always said about the first two X-Men movies. And this feels way more in line with those two.
That's very true.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I also, there's some things that surprised me. I liked in what you're talking about. So Yoshida sends Yukio to bring Logan to Japan, where he basically says what you said, Paul, that you know, he wants to take – or he thinks he figured out a way that he can take Wolverine's gift and give it to himself to help him or to his family, and he wants yeah. to take it from him. And he's sort of saying, like, you want to die, right? I mean, so I can give you that. I can, you know. And
Are you done yeah. with this? Can I have some? Are you done?
What I like is I was nervous that Wolverine was going to be like, yeah, okay. That sounds good. I want to die. And I thought, I'm not sure it's so clear cut with somebody. I'm not so sure that a Logan in this point really understands what he wants. It was really going like, boy, I just want to die. So I kind of like that he says, no, you don't want what I've got. Like
yeah.
he understand what I do think he understands is that this is a curse. And he's like, I can't give this to anybody else. And you know, but there's maybe an inkling there of maybe he's not quite ready to let go, which I like. I mean, these are the sort
yeah.
of complications of character that keep them from being those cardboard cutouts. You know, and then quickly thereafter, his immortality is taken from him, I guess that's maybe the main thrust of this movie then, is that now Wolverine is in Japan and he has had his healing power taken from him, but they don't kind of say that right away. It happens slowly. Yeah. What did you guys think about that? The way they sort of slowly reveal that things aren't quite right.
I think it's just sort of a brilliant choice that you have a dramatic problem in that your character is immortal. take that away from him and see what's left over. And you get a guy who still sort of behaves. He's still running towards bullets.
Yes.
Right.
Because that's all he knows. It's not like he gained immortality, you know, at some point in his life. He's always had that healing factor.
His whole fighting style is kind of probably based on the fact that throwing he can just take a lot of hits.
Yeah, yeah, the fastball specials. I mean, it's all about the fact that he can walk away from anything. And now he's getting hit with bullets. And I like that it's not just like one bullet takes him out. He can still take a bullet. And this healing factor is sort of, it's going away gradually.
It played to me like it was slowly going away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that it also says something about, to get into like masculinity versus femininity and stuff, I think that Wolverine is definitely one of the most masculine heroes. And I like that this movie posits that like Wolverine can be weak. Like he is weak and like giving up and like asking for help and needing help and things are usually not masculine, but like Wolverine has to get saved by women a bunch in this movie, but it is still played. It's not played as a bad thing. Whereas I think in like other movies, it would have been undercut or, I don't know, treated as a weakness. But I like that Wolverine, you're still seeing a very masculine hero in a compromised state. And it is all done so delicately and so well that you're never once like, oh, Wolverine's a pussy now.
No, yeah, I think that he's vulnerable and realistic about it. He doesn't put up much of a fight when Yukio suggests, I'm your bodyguard. Whereas another hero might be like, she's just being scrappy and that's funny. And really I'm going to be protecting her. He kind of rolls with it and he comes to understand I'm in trouble here. I just got messed up.
And the movie does a really good thing of actually having Yukio follow through on that. Like it isn't like, I'm going to be your bodyguard. And then she gets taken out immediately and it's a joke. It's she's going to be his bodyguard. And we've already seen her be incredibly capable. And then when Wolverine is doing the Prometheus self-surgery on himself, she then again saves him.
Yeah.
She distracts him.
She buys him the time he needs. Yeah.
And it's great. Like, so at the end when she's like, I'm going to be your bodyguard. It's like, yeah, she is. She is a really good partner to have.
It's a great relationship. And I mean, one of the earliest comics that I read that I sort of inherited from my older cousins was a Wolverine issue with Jubilee in it. And they're a great pair.
Yeah.
And I think Kitty has been in the film franchise. Jubilee has been in it to a certain extent and Rogue. And so they've had sort of these mentor relationships with Wolverine. I think this is the strongest, most successful use of that where, clearly they can be a dynamic duo.
Yeah, and I think also with Rogue, in the movies with Rogue, like Rogue needed something from Wolverine, like she needed protection. Whereas with Yukio, right. I don't get it as a sidekick. I really feel like they are on equal ground. Like for the first time, Wolverine has a female relationship where like she's got his back unquestionably, which is really good. It's really cool.
Yeah, it definitely feels like a partnership, especially by the end of the movie, which we'll, I don't want to get to yet. But, it definitely follows through with that. So I completely agree with you guys on this.
So yeah. I think one of the things that people were really excited about with this movie when the trailers were coming out, there's going to be a lot of ninjas. How did you? So obviously we like a lot of the character stuff. We like a lot of the relationships, a lot of the dynamics. How did you feel about the super heroics? Especially when this is a movie where our main character, our one central mutant, is going to be rid of his powers, essentially. Does this feel like a traditional comic book movie? If not, what's different about it? Is it just that he doesn't have his powers?
Oh, I think they use it to great effect in that his powers are fading, like you guys said. So you start with an action sequence where Mariko, who Wolverine is interested in, I don't want to come back to that when we talk about Mariko if we have time. But, that was an interesting one where he realizes that something's wrong. She's about to be married. Or no, I'm sorry. It's her grandfather's funeral, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
He's apparently passed away. They're at this funeral. And Logan figures out that something's wrong. These Buddhist monks have Yakuza tattoos under them. And so it explodes into this big fight scene. and a chase scene, but it's interspersed with these, like every time Wolverine gets shot, they sort of do this hazy sort of slow-mo moment where he sort of, you know, you realize that the bullets are having an effect on him that they haven't had enough.
It's sort of like a punch drunk kind of thing.
Yeah, it does. It has that feeling.
Really, really innovative. Really cool.
And he keeps going, and this long sequence even leads to a fight on a bullet train, on top of a bullet train, which was awesome.
That was a really good scene. Because how many times have you seen a fight on top of a train? And it's usually in like a Western where it's this sort of slow moving train. And then, then Skyfall had one, which is a little bit faster because it's a modern train. Then you get to Japan, you got bullet trains. They move really fast.
Exactly. And so you asked about, you know, like how this holds up as a superhero movie. Well, it kind of blends the between like an action or like a Western, like you said, actually, you know, he is like a Western hero in many ways in this. But they, you know, use the fact that he still is a guy that's got claws and, you know, to sort of up the action to this insane bullet train action sequence where he's using his claws and the Yakuza guy is using knives to like plunge them into the top of the train to hold still so they don't get blown away. But then it's almost like this video game sequence where you have to jump at the right moment above these signs and it will immediately put you much further back on the train, right? Because you can imagine rushing forward. Well, so you've got to get back down before the train ends and get your claws back in. And so you have this sort of rules in this fight where, you know, if you've got a guy behind you, you have to turn around, you have to let go, fly back, plunge your claws in, you know, and it really was effective and fun, but it didn't break any of its rules.
I'm trying to like picture now what that fight is like if you remove the bullet train from the equation and it's just two guys lying on their bellies, like swatting at each other.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, I've never seen an action scene like that before.
it was, you know, exhilarating. I mean, it moves so quickly and there's points where you're like, The Yakuza guy, he's gonna fly away, like, but then he manages to catch that knife in, you know, one more time, and then you get the peek in looking through the sunroof at Mariko just sitting there listening to music, for some nice dissonance, and then you get away from that, and I think there's some great comedy in this movie, like especially when you get to the hotel,
this
sleazy kind of theme hotel, and I've been mentioning on Twitter that they did sort of a Blue Valentine homage, and by that I mean they use that Mission to Mars room. I think it's called the Future Room in Blue Valentine, but it's basically the same idea that it's this space theme room for hookups basically, and so Wolverine's gonna be in there, and then to pass out on the balcony, very serious, he's bleeding out basically. Yeah. Mariko saves him by finding a veterinarian to take
play
care of him.
Student. Animal man theme.
It's
right?
It's playing with that, and so to wake up and it's not just like funny because he's waking up and there's goats, you know, over to the side. Like, what the hell happened? It's like a hangover kind of moment. But it absolutely plays into that whole theme of he's this beast, and that also comes into play when they get to her sort of ancestral home. Out in rural Japan, near Nagasaki again, and they make love, and when they wake up after he's had some bad Jean Grey dreams, she talks to him this whole speech about being fascinated by the clawed animal.
Yeah.
Her grandfather has told her as sort of almost like a myth, which I loved. It was like he told me about this animal that lived in the bottom of the well, you know, which I thought was just this fantastic way to tell his experience of, you know, World War II, the Nagasaki stuff, you know, but kind of show the impact that you guys talked about earlier, how it just shapes your whole life. But he tells it to his granddaughter as this sort of fairy tale story, which I thought was utterly fascinating.
To her, this is well before she was born, and so it is like a myth. For him, it was a bad vacation, you know, like, oh, man, that one time in Japan where I ended up in the bottom of the well and they dropped an atomic bomb on us, that sucked. So I love the distance.
What did you guys think about the character of Mariko?
Loved her. This is one of the areas where I feel like the movie actually somehow manages to improve upon the source material. Because I feel like Mariko in the comics was always very one note. She was just Wolverine's girlfriend, and then she dies, and he's sad about it. Whereas in this, it's almost like Mangold and I don't know who wrote it. Ugh, wish I did. because kudos to them for realizing, well, she's going to have to be a damsel in distress. Mm-hmm. That's kind of her thing. So, but they did the great choice of she was a damsel in distress because of her own heritage and not anything to do with Wolverine. Every time she was kidnapped, it was not to make Wolverine mad. It was because they wanted her, which I think was a smart choice.
And it's, then also it's Christopher McQuarrie, Mark Bombach, and Scott Frank, by the way.
Great, great work, guys. And then I also love the choice to just slyly say that, yeah, I was a knife champion when I was a teenager.
So that, that's so like, come into play, they, folks.
Yeah, they give her a reason that, yeah, she's going to get captured, but she's going to take out one or two Yakuza every single time, which was great. Just imagine, like, in Iron Man 3, if when Guy Pearce kidnaps Pepper Potts, if she had at least punched him in the face once or twice. Like, that, I don't know, like, to me, that eases over the damsel in distress nature of that. If yeah, the woman fights back and isn't efficient.
I think it's a feat that she could be easily defined by all these different relationships. She's in a love rhombus, basically, with Wolverine, Harada, the politician guy. And then her father and her grandfather are also sort of using her as this pawn in this whole corporate thing. And so there's all these men in her life. But then I agree with you. You've written about this, Brett, that the more interesting relationship is with her and Yukio, who's her surrogate sister, this sort of like this pauper that they brought in who was digging through the garbage for food, orphans and brought in. And now it's just such an interesting relationship that she doesn't look upon her, you know, haughtily or anything.
And all the others do. Her father does. But you know, she does not, which
and
is
it's,
a,
and
a
it's
nice
Mariko
testament.
Who decides to go away from the corporate center and where all her family are to this home that was it the grandfather's home before?
Yeah.
I forget how so, it was introduced, but she's basically going back to the old family home out in the country, and she clearly still has relationships with all these villagers. And you know, like when they come to her when this tree has fallen into the road, and all those roots are really important to her. And I think that actually says so much about the character, because she's been raised in a way that is ushering her away from that.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. she has to make the conscious decision to go back to that. So I think she's a really strong, really interesting character.
Yeah, I will admit that I got a little worried at first to be the way it's introduced. You know, Yukio, who's already, we've seen that she's a badass. She takes Logan to, you know, Japan to see the father. And that's when he first sees Mariko. And she's sort of, I think she's dressed in white. And so she's got this very virginal quality, and she seems like the delicate flower. And immediately Logan is looking at her with like one eye raised. And I'm like, oh no. Because this is a tough thing in films, is to have the guy just fall instantly in love with the damsel. And I'm going like, man, Yukio's a badass, you know, but you just it's like, I feel like suddenly like she's the ugly sister, and you're like, oh, but her, I like her. And I'm like, this could go poorly. But to the testament, they did treat it more like one of those movies where two people are thrown into a situation together, and then they slowly kind of backtracked and figured out, you know, their sort of attraction to each other. In that, I do believe that Mariko would be attracted to Logan for his role, and I do believe that Logan would be attracted to Mariko not just because she's a sort of virginal maiden and beautiful, but because she's actually a very interesting, you know, person. She's got a lot of burdens that she carries, and she does prove herself to be strong when she's sort of saying like, you know, I'm gonna go here, you do whatever, you know. And I do think she makes some active choices that save her from that, and I do also really like the relationship between her and Yukio. It works really nicely in this, and to Brett's point, that's way more characterization than either of those characters ever got in the 80s X-Men stuff that I read, because they're both sort of slightly one-note characters, and they're much more intriguing here.
I mean, I love Yukio in the comics. I mean, Yukio is who makes Storm get a mohawk, so I'm always going to love her for that. But also,
me too. Trust
Yukio
me.
Is burdened in the... I think Yukio is a great character in the original Miller Claremont series, but she is burdened with she loves Wolverine. Like, she's like, you're my soulmate. And then she pursues him aggressively, which I think turns the trope on its head a little bit, that the woman is aggressively pursuing the male. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But this movie removes that. Like, I was waiting for Yukio to fall in love with Wolverine, or I was waiting for her to do things because of Wolverine, but she goes to save Wolverine because they're equals. And the turning moment for Yukio is Shingen saying, Mariko is done with you. You're just a toy.
Yeah.
And that drives her to be like, no, like, she's my friend. I'm going to stand by her. Like, I love that they took all of the like iffy things from Claremont's stuff, who Claremont is a pretty choice writer when it comes to feminism and comic books. I like that they even took the problematic stuff out of his stuff and made this movie even better.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I guess what I was thinking about with that original story is that it's a much tighter story. And so Yukio's role in that initial 4-issue Wolverine miniseries from the 80s is basically Yukio is working for Shingen, but she falls in love with Wolverine. Yeah. And there's no other dimensions to that. It's just, well, I work for this guy, but I'm in love with this guy, but this guy's in love with that other guy. Or, you know, but this guy's in love with that other woman, you know, and so it's a much tighter love triangle, I guess, and it's less forgiving. This one just adds this little complication and nuance, and so I think it's smart that they removed that and altered it, and so I actually really liked both of those characters, and Mariko was the one I was worried about at first, and then she sort of proved herself over the course of the movie, the filmmakers kind of proved her to me, you know, like smartly with just good character choices.
Now, this is an interesting film in that coming out of it, I wished that I could give a rating to the first two acts and then another rating to the third act. I don't want to say it's schizophrenic, but I heard someone describe it that it was like a 4-issue miniseries where there was a whole new creative team came on for the 4th issue and completely forgot everything that was built by the creative team of the first 3. Mm. And it's not necessarily that it ends poorly, because the very end is okay, and I'm talking even before the mid credit sequence, which we should probably talk about. But that final boss battle, and that's the best way to describe it. I think the rest of the movie deserved something a little bit more nuanced, because that it just I think the greatest sin for that final boss battle and Viper and the Silver Samurai is that it's familiar. We've seen it many, many times.
Yeah.
It's people clinging from ledges. There's, you know, it's a tiered, you know, arena. It's the game of death pagoda. And you know, there's levels to it and people falling and stuff, and there's, you know, a big robot, and Viper's a problem, I think. Viper is just not a super compelling villain. I think had they not used Lady Deathstrike previously, this might have been a good place for her. Viper's just not that. She's a henchman, but because the identity of the Silver Samurai, though it's telegraphed early on,
I did not see it coming.
You didn't see it coming, like, no, until wait, okay. like his
oh,
head
I guess
came
I should have. Now I'm looking back, I definitely should have. But I was, super engrossed.
Let me back up, Brett. Okay, I did not see it coming, and the third act also did something else that I did not see coming.
Oh,
and
geez.
I was super impressed, and so I can't totally denounce the third act because
okay, well let's.
Can
talk
I just
it.
Say this? They chopped off Wolverine's claws.
Yeah, that was nuts.
Like, yeah, I was because in one, my head I'm like, how do they undo that?
And then that's why I was like, oh, that was my big oh shit moment in this movie because I did not expect that.
I feel like Viper probably could have burst into song and I wouldn't have noticed that happen because my mind would have still been like, what did they just do?
See, he no longer has his, that's important to note. He doesn't have his adamantium claws anymore. They're bone claws.
Yeah. Right. And they've done stuff like that in the comics only in the sense that, like, I think Magneto sucked out his adamantium at one point. So he was just back to bone claws and bone and just regular bones inside him. I don't think I've ever seen someone chop off the metal claws in a comic book. So that was like, to me, that was just brand new. Like a lot of stuff like was kind of familiar. You know, this was a big part in the Act 3, which I'm like, oh no, giant samurai robot. Oh, and then he chopped his claws off.
That was like, nuts. Wow.
Okay, well that's cool. I don't entirely understand how drilling into his knuckles where the claws came from.
Well, getting the marrow. I feel like they were sucking out his marrow, which would be like
that's gross.
I don't know, pure genetic, maybe, to get his hailing factor. Guys, yeah, I don't know.
It's dubious, but I do like the idea. If it for some reason has to be the marrow, then that's the only way you can get Wolverine's marrow. You got to open up the bones, right? And they're covered in metal. So I kind of like that. As
yeah, it's just, you know, I think a lot of it is just the visual. There, it gets to, the movie actually gets to this point where when he gets to the village around where that pagoda is, in the snow, that it just really looks like a set. Like, it just, the movie really suddenly looked much less expensive when they got to that point. And that's nitpicking, because the action was good, and that, you know, the whole ninjas with arrows sequence was pretty cool.
And that ties back to the bear. He shoots him with a poison arrow, something I noticed that in rereading the Claremont thing, is that's how Claremont kind of dealt with Wolverine's healing factor a lot, was that everything would be poisoned. He'd get poisoned constantly so that he could be a little sluggish and slow to heal.
You know what? I'm not the kind of guy who would yell out something in the movie theater, although the movie theater had to go to see this. There were a lot of people like that. I wanted to be like, oh no, kryptonite arrow, because it's like, it was green.
Right.
And it's the same effect, really. So we get to, I think Viper is the biggest problem for me.
Well, she's that sort of one note scenery chewing villain. I didn't think she was a great enough actress to really make it that sort of level where you can have sort of a one note villain, but if they're really just great on screen, you don't mind as much.
The guy in Iron Man 3 was really
The Mandarin guy?
The guy Eric Saban,
the guy from
the extremist guy.
Oh, okay.
The extremist guy.
Yeah, he was really good.
He was really interesting, and just like, he had like this great electricity, but then even just the costume for Viper was like, it was out of, you know, the first X-Men movie. Like,
maybe I've drank a lot of the X-Men Kool-Aid. Okay. So I'm like, I'm fine with Viper. She's the only thing I think that the bullshit. Oh, geez, can I even say that on
this
podcast? Thing with me is the. You could take away literally every single one of her Viper powers and it would have not changed her character at all. Like, she did not need to have all of those over the top. Like, that felt very much like Fox being like, there's only one mutant in this movie. Gotta add more. Gotta sell tools. Right.
Because you know, Yukio is a mutant as well. And she has sort of this
death
precognition kind of thing, but that's not a visual at all.
I like that they don't use the word mutant almost at all in this movie. I think they use, they drop it maybe two times, but a lot of it's like, you're different. You're like that, you know? And I really like that because it for me kind of kept it away from the other X-Men movies and said, no, this is just, you know, this guy in Japan. And yes, there are people that are different, but it's not a big thing like it was in the other movie. It's not this big, world shattering event or, you
know,
anything
like
that. There's
not 80
of
them.
It's just a small quiet. Yeah, exactly. Right. It's just a small quiet story where yes, there are those among us who are different. You know?
While we're on the topic of Yukio's precognition, that's how they telegraph it, because she says, "I didn't foresee him dying." She says it once, and then I remembered it later. That's probably what they're doing. But then, like later on, she kept underlining it. She's saying, "I was wrong. I was wrong about Yoshida. He died, even though I didn't foresee it." And
he also says, like, he's been stockpiling adamantium, and then she finds all those, like, Silver Samurai blueprints right next to his hospital bed.
Well, that's late enough in the game that it's that was okay.
I should have put it together.
So you didn't realize it until
watching the Silver Samurai move and being like, is he remote controlled?
Right.
Who is it? Because
I was wondering, I was like, what do people think that is? Like, is he a robot or?
I totally thought it was a robot.
They had the
thing out. I admit it. I totally bought it.
Because, I mean, he's just moving kind of mechanically and he's not, you know, talking.
Harada is supposed to be the Silver Samurai, is the fake out.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, the Silver Samurai is Kenichiro Harada. So I was waiting for Harada to get into that samurai outfit just because I know those characters.
No, he's just Japanese Hawkeye. That's all that, you know, he's the arrow guy.
Which was awesome.
Okay. So it's, I'm not saying I'm so clever. I figured it out. I'm just saying that's what they were doing, you know, I was wrong. I didn't foresee his death. And I was like, but when I realized, I was like, oh, that's cool. That's a neat idea. It becomes that over the top bad guy who like sucks up all the power but then he takes too much of it, you know, and then, and it's, you know, hubris is his downfall. And,
but also, and you're like, not wrong that that is familiar. We've seen that so many times. But for me, I was still going like, but they chopped off his claws.
That was nuts. Piper's also defined in, like, she's Madame Hydra. So it's also kind of like you removed the most important thing about Viper from her character. Because Hydra is owned by Marvel.
There's also the scene with her and Harada in the alley. And it's sort of a weird use of her power. So she has, like, venom and then anti-venom. So she can spit at Harada, and then she can, and then she can spit the anti-venom at him to make sure that he doesn't have the scars, because
she's sort of a walking plot device.
It was really interesting.
Kind of figure that, you know, she sort of allows them to sort of poison things and take poison away as they need it. And, you know,
I liked the look of her character. I liked the fact that the main villain was a woman. That was cool. And I also like that she was super different from Mariko and Yukio, maybe in a bad way, but we still did get another diverse depiction of a female character, which Wolverine did not have to do. This could have just been a testosterone fest like the first one. So
I think that's the pleasant surprise, is that and the strange revelation that July 2013 is the month of cool Japanese female characters between this and Pacific Rim.
Right.
It's just really interesting. And because you don't, we sadly don't expect that from comic book movies. A lot of these female characters get really short shrift. And so I do like the idea. I think it's the problem is we're living in a post Tom Hiddleston Loki world.
Yeah.
And we've seen how good a villain can be, that a lot of these, I think Loki and I think Ian McKellen's Magneto are the best villains we've seen.
Absolutely.
In these modern
and Michael Fassbender as young Magneto, by the way,
that's
to it.
Yeah. To make a great,
these are great depictions of villains. And, you know, the best characters in this are not Viper. I mean, it's all the Japanese characters, which is great. I will admit to you guys, I got a little muddled in just the overall plot. There's so many different things going on that I could not tell you. And maybe you guys know, maybe this is just me not being able to follow it all, but I could not tell you why they had to bring Mariko to that hideout at the end, like for the boss battle. I didn't understand. I understand why they had to drill into Wolverine, but why they just didn't do it like that first night or whatever. I guess I got a little confused with some of the plot mechanics.
Like while he's unconscious, you know?
Yeah.
For many hours. Because they were able to like load him up into this, you know, into the stocks.
Why did
kind
the grandfather have to die, like fake his death and be removed only to be and go to this remote location, you know? And then them kind of gear everything towards getting them both back to that spot. I'm very confused by some of the mechanics in that. So were they saving Mariko from the Yakuza?
Like that's what they do. I don't know. I don't know the answers to those questions.
So the only reason I bring that up is it didn't really bother me in the movie, but afterwards it's just like the plot, there were some places where the plot mechanics were so quick. It's like, well, the Yakuza are trying to kidnap Mariko because they're in line with the guy she's supposed to marry who was hired by the father who doesn't know that the grandfather isn't really dead. And it just sort of makes your head spin in some of that. But I think that the through line through all this is just Logan as a sort of outsider in this culture, you know, trying to figure out and find his own way through this. And that remains constant. And the relationship between Logan and Mariko and Yukio remains constant. So that all kind of works. There's some stuff where I'd have to watch it again probably to understand some of the mechanics. And I'm sure more eagle-eyed viewers will pick up on this stuff. I just, you know, I felt kind of like dumb afterwards.
I think those are reasonable, you know, criticisms. I think for me, what it comes down to is, you know, I guess I'm coming down as I'm the grump about the third act. It's familiar, but I'm able to, but I think for some people that's going to, I think that third act is such a shift that it's going to taint the movie for a lot of people. For me, though, I just was like, I'm just going to skip that chapter when I'm watching it, you know, at home.
Right.
And because I love the rest of the movie, I thought it was so strong. And I really do think it edges out Iron Man 3 for me as the best comic book movie of the year so far.
Yeah, me too.
I have high hopes for Thor, though.
I liked Iron Man 3 more than you guys did. And so this one's tough for me because those first two acts, I mean, the character work is really solid.
Right.
And, you know, and so But I really liked Iron Man 3. I don't know. They're probably very similar in my mind right now in terms of just my
the thing with Iron Man 3 for me is that I can't isolate just one act as the problem.
Okay. I see.
Like it's a little bit more pervasive through the whole thing. There's stuff that I love about Iron Man 3. And I mean, yeah. I gave it a 3, which means I liked it. I just wasn't head over heels for it.
It's all like gut reaction thing. Like I the credits started on Iron Man 3 and I was just like, huh, okay. Yeah. Whereas this, I was like, fist pump, oh yeah, because I mean that the ending of the post credit scene.
Let's talk about that. I think it's a good place to close off because it's they've been watching some of those other Marvel movies. This is their answer to the Nick Fury stuff, to the Avengers Initiative post credit sequences in all the Marvel Studios movies, where they're now tying this to Days of Future Past.
And this was all shot not too long ago. Like, they'd wrap the movie. And I like that they say two years later.
2 years later.
Right. It was kind of like James Mangold still gets his definitive film. He didn't set up Days of Future Past at all. There's still 2 years after his ending. So right. You can assume that Yukio and Wolverine were out adventuring for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get this post-credit scene that directly ties into Days of Future Past, which I'm now more excited about than ever.
I think a lot of that post-credit sequence is it's really just about star power. It's cool to see Magneto and it's cool to see Xavier with those actors all in one place.
For the first time in like 7 years.
There is a thing though where it feels like someone like took a piece of paper and wrote on someone's back like that scene in like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Because it's just about there's something coming and you need to be there and it's all
that,
leading
that
up to
that Trask commercial.
You do get the Trask commercial,
cool.
Right. So it's so like all the stuff
and that's
there,
important, yeah. Yeah. But that Trask commercial, that is really for fans. I mean, no one outside of that, if, as you posited, Paul, if somebody could go into this movie never having seen anything before and they could really enjoy this movie. But that final scene really depends upon, you know, knowledge of this stuff. And the Trask thing, you have to have knowledge of the comics. But you know, Magneto and Professor X, first of all, Professor X being alive again, and then Magneto and Professor X working together, it's kind of big. Ooh, what's that all about? And it does exactly what it's supposed to be. It's this sort of coda of like, you know, oh my gosh, what thing could happen that's so bad that these two could be there together?
Right. Are they going to explain how he's back?
Presumably in Days of Future Past, they better.
Well, guys, they did at the end of the end credit scene of X-Men The Last Stand, which
Do
is
they?
Just... Well, during the course of X-Men The Last Stand, they mentioned that Moira McTaggart is on Muir Island with some, like, comatose patient. And then the post-credits scene, she's at Muir Island. And then from the viewpoint of, like, eyes opening up, you hear Patrick Stewart say, Moira? Or something like that.
What?
Okay.
I'm not sure I ever saw that post-credits sequence.
Yeah. Well, also, if we want to talk about the X-Men Origins Wolverine post-credits sequence, which was him in Japan at a... It was like... Are you drinking to forget? And he goes, no, I'm drinking to remember. Which I guess might have been like the 80s in the timeline of whatever. But I'm glad that this movie did not just pick up on that. Thank God.
Yeah, I think it takes all that it needs from the previous stuff, but then does its own thing pretty well for a good chunk of time. And I just my experience just going through this movie was just like, wait a minute, I'm enjoying this. What's going on? Wait a minute, this is good. Like, I like this. What's happening? And then only just, you know, for like, you know, 15 minutes was I just like, eh. But then it comes back and then they get on the plane. And I'm like, that's cool. I'm with this.
Yeah.
So
I love that Mariko. I love that there's no like love story resolution. Like they kiss, they acknowledge they have feelings for each other. But Mariko's like, I got a business to run. Shades on. Like it was pretty great. I'm just imagining her and Pepper Potts like doing a business call and like getting shit done.
That's right. They probably would work together.
Oh, he's so good.
If you're a fan like me, and I know Paul is not, but if you're a fan like me of Big Trouble in Little China, I feel like this was the sort of Jack Burton riding off in his semi at the end was similar to you know Logan getting into the truck. And I think ultimately for me, that's what this felt more like. Is this is a good service of the character in that it doesn't bother with too much of the continuity elements. It just sort of tries to focus on what makes Wolverine Logan an interesting character. It finds him in an interesting place. And starts him, you know, as this man who isn't sure what he wants to live for and kind of brings him to a little bit of a conclusion there. And, you know, over the course of it, we get a character that feels to me more like this sort of lone man, Western action hero you know, who's just searching for something and finds some little bit of maybe not peace, but maybe understanding. And so to me, you know, whatever happens in the third act, they still allowed you to get that arc in the character. And that was great. I mean, that's kind of what you want in a movie like this.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. So I think in conclusion, I think we all had a good bit of fun with this movie. I think found a richer film than we were maybe expecting, what's come before. And, you know, it's an imperfect film, but I think there's a lot going for it. And I'm looking forward to checking it out again. I don't know if I'll see it in the theaters, but I'll definitely be picking it up on video to watch that again for that bullet train sequence. So, all right. And now I also have a written review over on ifanboy.com, so you can check that out. Coming up soon, we're going to have another special edition on the DC animated film Justice League, The Flashpoint Paradox. So check that out from the Animation Brain Trust in just a few days, actually. So until then, we'll be seeing you.